Accession number 27258, Mr. Len Stockhill, Reel 7. Now, we're talking about your time on HMS Cowdery, looking at what life was like before we look at what the ship did, because, I mean, we'll go on to that, obviously. What about the other leading seamen and the petty officers and things? How did they get on with them generally?
We got on generally very well with them. And especially, I don't know whether it was favouritism or just because respect from us, because we'd been in the army for such a long while, Alf and I. And they gave that a little bit of respect for us because they knew what we'd been well trained and everything like that. You know, we weren't like some of them, like this young lad, fresh from Ganges and such like.
So they didn't throw their weight about, the petty officers?
Not really, no. As long as you did your job, they were quite happy.
What about the officers?
The officers, well, they were the same, more or less the same. If you got on with the job, did as you were told, they were all right.
But did it differ much from the army officers you were used to?
Not a lot of difference. The army, I think, were more strict than the naval officers. The only thing about what I always noticed, both when I was on the Archer and Cowdery, was that the captain, you only saw him once in a blue moon. If you're in action, then you would be on the bridge. And if you were a lookout, you were on the bridge. You could see him. Or a signalman, you would see him. But of course, you would be on the gun deck. But during a normal day, all you saw was the number one, who was the commander. But the the captain, he was elusive. He kept his own cabin, and everything was done through the commander. No, what we used to call a Jimmy, number one. Jimmy.
Now, just back into some of the more the thing. What about the heads? What were the heads? The latrines or the toilets?
The, latrine, I mean,
the heads that were.
The heads on the Archer were quite big, and a lot of flush toilets. But on the Cowdery, there was only two, one forward and one aft. One, a little tiny cubicle, which you could see was the shape of the sides of the ship. You know, you could see all the rivets' heads and that such like. And there was just one bowl and two toilets. And they were very, very... Yet when you closed the door, your knees were jammed up against it. So there wasn't a lot of room.
Well, they kept clean, I presume.
Oh, yes. Well, there was a detail to clean the heads.
Now, what about washing your clothes? I mean, I presume on the Archer there was a laundry, but I'm not so sure there would be on
Archer there was a laundry, but on the Destroyer there wasn't. You did your own dobbing.
Now, how did you do it?
Well, you had a bucket of water, and you took it down onto the engine deck, onto the deck below, you know, on the... And there was a steam pipe. It turned some steam into your hot, cold water to heat your water up. And then you went on the after deck, and with a bit of pussy soap, and you washed out your smalls by hand. And then you hung them up in this evaporators. That's what we used to call them. It's where the water evaporators used to be. And it was quite warm in there. And we used to have a line slung across. And the officers didn't go in there much. And your clothes, which got dried very quick. Didn't bother ironing them or anything like that. But the only time what clothes you ironed was when you were putting your creases in your trousers.
Now, what about recreation? You know, on the mess, what would you do for fun?
I mean, well, you would play cards or dominoes.
For money, or was gambling?
Or you could read.
Was gambling allowed?
No, it wasn't allowed, no.
So the games you played were just for fun?
For fun, yeah. Aussie wasn't allowed then, which was what they call bingo now. They used to call it Aussie. Used to play a lot of, what do you call, ockers?
Ludo.
Ludo. Used to play a lot of that.
Why was it so popular in the Navy?
I don't know. But I found this out in the Navy, you know. I knew about it, Ludo, as a youngster. But, pardon me. But it's very, very popular in the Navy. I don't know why, but as I say.
Now, gambling wasn't allowed, but lots of things aren't allowed. Did it go on? Was there any Crown and Anchor schools? Or?
Never seen one. Never seen one yet. I've heard of them, and I've actually seen the cloth. I saw a cloth when I was on the Archer. And I think it was one of the petty officers that had that.
But no one was playing it when you were... What about, were there photography, were there any firms going, as they called them, where, you know, people doing photographs for money or anything like that?
No. The only firm I ever knew, it was later on in the story.
Okay, we'll come to that then. So, let's go into the story then. I mean, you join the ship, and then you go to Scapa, and you're doing your running up trials.
That's right.
Gunnery
and
trials.
Then we went back to Sheerness, and we did our duties there, and we were sort of assistant to Captain D. Captain D was the lead destroyer, with the captain would instruct the other captains. He would sort of the sort of squadron leaders, you might say.
And what were you
from Sheerness? We used to pick up the North East Coast convoys. Ships travelling to Hull, Newcastle, Hartlepool, Scotland. We used to escort them up as far as Scapa Flow. And then if there was anything being made, a convoy being made up out of Scapa, then we would pick them up on the way down and bring them back down.
And what was it like escorting these East Coast convoys? What would happen?
Well, depending on the weather, you know, if you had a decent convoy that kept in line and kept the same speed, you were all right. But if you had one that was lagging behind and chivying, you were ordered to go back and chase it up, like, to get it back. Or if they were getting out of line, which didn't come up much, because we had escorts on the other side. There was one destroyer, nearly all unclassed, at the front, one at the rear, and one on each side. And there would be one on either side would be patrolling up and down, keeping them in line.
Now, what would happen? What were the big risks?
Well, the big risk was air raids was the biggest risk, and obviously submarines. But we didn't attach much on submarines.
Now, what about the air raids?
Busy in the Atlantic.
Tell us about the air raids.
Air raids, when we had to be on the watch for all the while. And, like, we used to get a signal to say that if there was an air raid on a particular part. And we used to see these aircraft going over, but they weren't bothering us, and we didn't bother them to attract attention to the convoy. They were flying over to bomb the mainland, you see.
Was the convoy ever attacked while you were on it?
Not by air.
What about E-boats?
E-boats, well, we didn't see any of those, only in the Scheldt estuary.
So that's later. So were the East Coast convoys you were on not attacked?
Not attacked. We did see the Mark I doodlebugs go over, which we wondered what they were, because it was the first time they'd come over. And we saw this light in the sky, and the lookouts reported it, and nobody could make out what it was. All I could see was this reddy orange glow, because it was night time, you couldn't see what shape it was, and nobody knew what it was till later on we found out what it was, you know. But this was coming across the North Sea, heading for Britain, like, you know.
Anything else would anything else happen on the East Coast convoys?
Nothing unduly. More or less uneventful, apart from what I've already mentioned. Because we didn't do that for long. We only did about two up and two back.
What happened next?
And then we went on to the Antwerp convoy.
Now, tell me about this. So this is deep into 44 now.
Yeah.
So what were the Antwerp convoys?
Well, we went up to Antwerp twice. The first time we went right into Antwerp. But the Germans were coming out of Antwerp as we were going up the river Scheldt, and we moved along the boy alongside, and we went to the pictures, the theatre, and we came out of there because we couldn't sort of make out the language that was being spoken to. And we went to a pub, but there was sort of a lot of shenanigans with loose women going on that we, Alf and I, weren't bothered about. So we came out and went back to the ship. Those had stopped. They had come back with some tales, like, you know. Now, whether you could believe them or not, I don't know.
Well, what about, were you attacked at all during those convoys to Antwerp, the Scheldt convoys?
Well, we hit a midget sub. We rammed a midget sub, it surfaced.
Now tell me about that.
Well, this midget sub, it surfaced, and we didn't know what it was going to do. So rather than take any chances, we just kept going and we rammed it.
And you actually saw this happen? You could see this happen from your...
Yeah.
You were on the gun, were you?
I was on a gun platform. And then we as this a miniature sub sort of came by, the men dived into the water and came to our scrambling net. We'd put scrambling net down. And there was two, an officer and an old stoker. He was probably doing the engines. Well, the officer was kept in the officer's mess, and this old bad stoker was kept in our mess. And with a guard on him all the while. Why, I don't know. Poor old bugger wouldn't do anything. He was about 45, and he'd probably been a reserve or something like that and called into the Navy, German Navy. But the officer, he was arrogant. When I saw him, he was really arrogant. He was young and arrogant. Typical Nazi, you know. But that's all I saw of them. The second time we didn't... They wouldn't let us go right up the Scheldt into Antwerp and our second Antwerp convoy. We only had to go as far as the estuary. But going into the estuary, we felt this terrible bump. And boom, 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 shaking the ship about. And we'd run over a wreck, an unmarked wreck, and it damaged or didn't spring a leak or anything, but the keel was badly damaged and the propellers were badly damaged, which we had to have repaired. We didn't have them repaired until after the second Scheldt estuary, we had to go at the King George V dock.
Now, anything else happened in the second Scheldt, you know, the trip to the Scheldt? Is there a note about them being an airboat, an air raid?
Oh, well, that was the first trip when we were in, we went to the pictures and we come out of the pictures because we couldn't, as I say, we couldn't understand the language. And we went to a pub and then we come back to the ship. But there was an air raid that night. And the cinema, we don't know whether it was the same cinema we went to, and there was 1,000 people in it, and it suffered a direct hit with one of these rocket bombs. I think it must have been the V1, and it killed about 1,000 people, we heard later.
That's the Rex cinema, I think that was.
In Antwerp, yes. But we don't know whether it was the same cinema that we'd gone to or not, because we came away... But as I say, that was in the first convoy. And the second convoy, as I say, we went just into the estuary. We rammed this midget sub, took the people aboard a prisoner, and then we ran over this wreck.
Now, what about the repairs? You went to the King George V docks
George
in London, isn't it?
For two reasons. For having these minor repairs, the keeler didn't know nothing about was the repairs on the propeller, which they were able to do with divers, because they were just sort of chipped, and they were smooth. Fired them out, you know, the chips out. But the main reason we went to caging King George V dock was to be prepared for Far East. The ship's camouflage had to be changed, and we also had rockets fitted to the side of our gun shields. And we were shown how to use these rockets.
Now, what were these rockets? Tell us about them.
They were like an elongated shell, but the propulsion part was about, I would say, about 18 inches long, and the shell was about 10.
And how did you work? How were you trained?
They were in racks, and they were connected up electrically in batteries of four, and the gun number one, he was instructed to fire them. And they were anti-aircraft rockets, and there was no sort of sighting because they were fixed. You couldn't sort of elevate them or train them. They were just fixed up the side. And they were fixed at the say it was 45 degrees, and they were just fired off into the air. It was just a hit and miss.
Just as a sort of barrage.
A barrage type of thing. And they were fixed on both gun turrets. And the other thing we had was a boiler clean. Well, that takes about a week. So one watch of the ship went on leave. And then when they came back after a week's leave, the other watch went on leave. By the time they came back, the boiler cleaning was finished, all repairs had been carried out, and we went straight out to sea and off to, well, the first stop was Gibraltar.
Now, when was this? Still in 44 or?
Yes, 44, end of 44.
Now, what do you remember of the voyage out to the Far East? That's quite a journey.
It was strange. What I noticed most was going out was you went to bed in one place and you woke up and you were somewhere else. For instance, we were in bed at the Sheerness, and then we went to Gib. And whatever the time was, but when he woke up on another day, you were in Gib. Where other days when you woke up, you were at sea. You could see you were at sea. And then we went from there to Malta, and we did a run up in Malta, and we did a firing in Malta. Used the 4-inch guns and these rockets to test the guns and the rockets out.
And how did they work?
They were all right. The rockets were the best, all right, in the sky. And we were in Malta. What struck me most about Malta was the how impoverished they were. You know, they hadn't got over this siege that they were, and there was still sort of very not a lot of food about. And the first thing I noticed about Malta and about how bad they were off for food, they used to come on deck, on the mess deck, they used to come out on Daiso as soon as you docked, if you're around a boy or on the quayside. And they would come inboard, the Maltese, and they would come on the mess deck, and they used to have what they call a mess, a gas bucket. And that's where you emptied your tea leaves and then scrape your dinner plates off, and then it was taken up and then over the side. But they were going into the gash bucket and pulling out the bits of meat and eating the bits of meat among all these tea leaves and such like. And to see them doing that, it was terrible. Of course, it was being soft. We used to give them all sorts of biscuits and what have you. And as I say, we were there about 2 weeks doing this run-up and gunnery practice.
So what happened next?
And from there, we went to, where did we go from Malta? Oh, we went to Sidi Bish. There's the entrance to the Suez Canal. And we had to have a boiler cleaned by this time in Sidi Bish. So we had 3 days each watch leave. It was the sewers where we had the boiler clean, but we went to this like a holiday camp for soldiers and sailors at Sidi Bish, and it was quite hot. The food, we went into local hotels for food, and it was terrible. There was big slimy lumps of meat floating about in that looked like soup. So we settled for the biscuits. But it was only, as I say, it was only 3 days each watch till they had the boiler clean. And then we went through the canal. We anchored in the Bitter Lakes, which was an experience. And the reason you anchored in the Bitter Lakes, so that the traffic coming through, we didn't know why we'd anchored. Then we realised afterwards is so they got the canal clear. There were one or two big troop ships we saw come through. And then we went through there into Aden. We went to Aden to get oil. And we anchored near one of these oiling platforms, which was well away from the sea, but it was connected, it was like a floating platform. It was connected to this oiling place. And we just put pipes down to this thing and that pumped the oil inboard into our oil tanks. But there was the sailors, well, weren't sailors, the natives, I should say, that used to come out to these floating platforms. If you chucked a penny or something down, they would dive off this platform and fish it up and come up with it in their teeth. And that's what was the amusement there.
How did you take to that? It's getting pretty hot by then, I should have thought.
And it was getting very hot. Very, very hot. Something we weren't used to. And we were always glad when it got dark. We cooled off. But, and of course, you slept anywhere then. I used to open my hammock out on the mess table and just sleep on the top. Others slept starkers in their hammocks, but they'd have a spreader in each end then, so the hammocks were opened out.
Now, where next then, after Aden? You were going to Trincomalee, weren't you?
We went from there to Colombo first, and we anchored alongside an American ship. There wasn't enough room for us to get along the quayside, but we didn't stay there long because there were that many ships in Colombo, and we got so many stores in then. And then we went to Trinco, where we just checked on the ammunition and had replenished ammunition. We had a couple of runs ashore.
What were they like?
They were quite good. We went into the countryside and there were natives. But at the depot, there's a cinema, but all the sides were open for to get the air through. And the beer was all bottled beer. And what they call it, Canadian bitter. And you went and paid so much, and you took your three bottles or four, whatever, and put them alongside you, while you were watching the film and you were drinking up there. We went to a village, a native village, just outside. Someone was showing us, told us about a bear. Like it was like one of these seaside resort bear. And nearby was this native village, and we went into this hut, and they'd got some native brew. So one of the lads said they would try it, and they gave him a mug to hold the beer, and the tops were all tied on with string. And of course he'd got the bottle over and cut the string, and the cork flew out that fast, knocked the bottom out of the mug. And there was nothing in the mug, because it all burst out. So I think it was the heat and the fermenting. Needless to say, Alf and I didn't have any at all. And well, this bloke who had got the mug didn't, because it was all come out. And we used to dive off the quayside and have a swim. And of course, some of the blokes, after they'd been to the cinema and had a few of these bottles of beer, when the Liberty boat came into the pier to take it off to the destroyer, which was anchored out, some of the blokes, I don't think it was any from our ship, but they were diving off the pier and going underneath the Liberty boats and coming up the other side. And then they were climbing aboard the Liberty boat. But at one stage, they set the pier alight. How they come to do that, I don't know. But we weren't ashore that night. We just saw this fire on the pier. And it came from some of the Liberty men had set fire to the pier.
Now, what was happening in the war against Japan? Because you're getting quite near the end of the war by the time you got out there, I think.
Well, it was in there where we found, it was in Trincomalee, where we found out that the war in Japan had finished. So
how did you feel about that?
Oh, when we're going home sort of thing. But it wasn't to be.
You were pleased about the dropping of the atomic bomb and everything, then?
Well, we didn't realise why they dropped this atomic bomb. All we found out at the end that the war was finished. We found out later why, but it didn't sort of register with us.
Were there any celebrations when the war ended?
Just a few cheers and splice the main brace. That was a double totter rum.
So what happened next then?
Well, what I was going to say, we didn't realise about this atomic bomb. And we didn't realise the devastation of anything like that. All we knew that it had caused the end of the war. The Japan had capitulated.
Now, but you weren't going home straight away, were you?
No, we thought we were. We carried on to Australia.
Now, whereabouts?
No. First of all, we went down to further down the leg of India to a place called Cochin in India. This was a little naval base.
And what were you doing there?
And we just got some leave there, and we went ashore to a cinema, much the same as what was in Trincomalee. And it was while we were sat there we met some of the lads off the Bista. That was one of our sister ships that were out with us. And one of the lads was being in the army with us, a lad called Tommy Cronin. And because we had a celebration meeting up with Tommy. Because he was in the same militia that Alfred Acaster, that was another friend of mine, was when they came to the battery. And funny enough, because I'm going back again now, when they had this militia come, Tommy Cronin and Alf Acaster, I had to teach them marching drill and things like that, because when they came they were in civvies and they were issued with a uniform from us.
So that was old friends?
They were old friends. We all met up together.
You had a good time at Shore of Cochin.
So we celebrated in Cochin. And then...